My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is Extraordinary Lives, a podcast from Lad Bible where we speak to people with a unique story to tell. A warning that this episode contains content which you may find distressing. I'm Ben Powell Jones, and coming up in this episode...
So you definitely get up to a lot of physical kinks and you use them, but you're using them to achieve psychological headspaces.
The most common things were things to do with anal. Then another one was golden showers, people are quite enamored with. And what was the... feet. Good old feet. Number one, probably.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Extraordinary Lives, the podcast brought to you by Lad Bible. I'm Ben Powell Jones and we're joined today by Eva Oh. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you for having me.
So for anyone who isn't aware of who you are, would you mind introducing yourself?
I am Eva Oh, as mentioned, and I currently work as a dominatrix. I've been in the sex industry as an escort, brothel worker, massage parlor worker, and a few other things for over a decade.
Okay, so it's a fascinating industry. We met you previously on a different video we did, and it's something that we felt would be interesting to explore more, especially the dominatrix element. I think is something that people have impressions of through popular culture, films and TV, but maybe don't know exactly how it works. But before we get into it, could we talk about you a little bit? You know, where you grew up, what your childhood was like. You told me a second ago that you like to remain mysterious, but what can we know about Eva O?
Mysterious? I don't know. I think there's enough information and exposure of me out there that it's not so mysterious anymore. But how I grew up? I was born in Southeast Asia to a very mixed family. Partly English also. And we traveled a lot from my birth. So everything from Southeast Asia, Australia, Europe mostly. And it did something to my voice, as you can see. It's kind of from everywhere. And I was very lucky to have all of those influences. And somehow I ended up here with you.
And as a child, were you an outgoing person? Were you shy?
I don't know how I would describe myself even now. I think on one hand... maybe shy is never the word, but I don't need to be the center of attention. And I think that was the same then. I think I've always been interested in observation. And I was happy to insert myself if I felt excited by it, but happy to sit back also.
Observation, so people watching and...
Yeah. Maybe even more so, you know, how those people like to sit at cafes and look at people going by. I almost don't do that. I more like to see the detail.
And I guess, what age did you find yourself becoming interested in, and look, throughout this conversation, if I use any terms or words that aren't how people like to be described, please let me know. But what age did you find yourself becoming interested in sex work?
When I first entered this industry, I was naive and I didn't even understand that it was sex work. When I was 27, I went for an interview in this BDSM dungeon and I had an come to the end of a probation at the most luxurious corporate job that I had ever been offered and I was over it. And so I looked up this term that an ex of mine had mentioned, the word dominatrix. I had an idea of this woman in leather and standing in some sort of independent position, but I didn't have any particular clue. It was just me following a crumb because I knew I wanted to do something different, or even just for a little while. And so I thought, let's Google this. I found a space. I went in for the interview, and the first question they asked was, have you ever been in the sex industry before? And I naively said, this is the sex industry.
So what did you think it was?
I wasn't exactly sure.
Just something different and exciting.
Something to do with power and something to do with
the psychology of playing with power, which it is, and which it is mostly. But because it interacts with people's sexuality, I consider it a part of the sex industry, and I realize that now. Yeah.
So you said you were in a corporate job beforehand.
Correct.
And also, 27 feels quite late to me.
Old?
No, not old. I mean, I'm a lot older than 27, but just
quite
going,
late.
You know, were you, what, do you mind me asking, what were you doing before this then? What was this kind of corporate life that you had?
I started off in my early 20s and went through a huge progression of different things. Mm. I think that I was always looking for some sort of creative stimulation, and I was definitely very idealistic, maybe still so. And that just brought me through a lot of different options. So I started off as a performance artist. I had a ballet background, moved into production, moved into the advertising world for a little bit, worked at the UN for a little bit in refugee research, did a design research stint, had a sustainable design agency, and then moved into strategic consulting.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was very mobile and happy to be open to life and information and experience, but it reached a point where I wanted to do it for money, and that was when I realized that money often equated a squashing of my ideals.
Okay. So it was hard to be paid for the thing that you really wanted to do.
Well, I was fascinated with the research that I was able to do, mm-hmm. but I wasn't enamored with how they were using that research.
Okay. Right, and I suppose that explains the 27 bit. But do you agree with me that 27 is late to come to a realization about that sort of career, or do you think that's average based on your experience?
I think some people go to their death not knowing what might suit them.
Okay, yeah. So you followed the crumb, as you said, from an ex-partner who'd mentioned the dominatrix.
He was joking. Okay. And I find out we're quite close.
Okay.
He was like, that was a joke, but okay, you took it.
Okay, so you go for the interview, and they said, have you ever worked in the sex industry? And presumably you said no.
I said, no, is this then?
Oh, okay. And then what happened?
And then they went, why don't you start? And we can see how you are in 2 weeks. That's the only way we'll know, basically. Okay. It was maybe a 5-minute interview. Yeah, and they were right. They were right. They'd seen so many of me before, I guess. So I stuck out the people who worked there. I was enamored with the job. I was motivated. I wasn't earning anywhere near what I was earning in those first few years compared to what I was earning in the corporate. But it was engaging enough for me to slug it out.
And do you mind me asking, like, when you first started at that job, is it... What do you do? What happens in those places?
Well, essentially the job is clients come in with specific ideas about how they want to have an experience, usually around fetish, often around power play. And you are there to carry out this fantasy scene for a moment in time, an hour, maybe more. And what happens within that is according to what they are interested in. But a lot of the times when you approach a dominatrix as opposed to maybe a fetish escort, you're looking for that power exchange, somebody to take charge of how you might emote, how you might move through space for a little while.
Okay, that's interesting. So can you tell us about your first experience, you know, when you first joined that BDSM dungeon? Mm. I guess what I find interesting about it as a concept is, like, how do you know what to do? Like, you know, I said to you earlier, we've met Danny D, who's a porn star, and, like, it's very clear what you have to do as a man in that situation. Well, to be good at it, I'm sure is, you know, complicated. But as in, how did you know? What you've just described sounds like it needs quite a high level of empathy, psychological reading and understanding.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like you could upset someone as much as make them happy.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So how do you know what to do on the first?
Do I know what I'm doing? It's 10 over years in, and I still feel like I have to be careful and that I'm learning.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing to be able to toy with people's minds, but like you said, it's a dangerous place.
Mm.
I observed... I did end up sessioning on my own that first day, which I am amazed about, but I was mostly observing how other people were doing it. I was invited into their sessions. I was helping them do certain things, and I just picked things up that way. But I mean, in the first few minutes when I entered on my work day, I sat down in the waiting room with all the, like, there were maybe three other people on shift that time. There was up to 25 sometimes.
Mm.
But there was three other people
in
the morning
25.
Shift. Yeah. Obviously, they had been told to watch me a bit. Now I realize. And one of them said to me, so have you worked in this before? No. Are you into kink at all? No. So why are you here? And I thought about it and I said, I think that something about this psychology really fascinates me.
Mm.
And she said that that's going to be the hardest thing to learn. So that's good that that's the start of it.
Mm.
Yeah. So you definitely get up to a lot of physical kinks and you use them, but you're using them to achieve psychological headspaces.
Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
So let's say just for very simply bondage. Say you're cuffing two hands, hands that are normally mobile, used, legs that usually can take you somewhere. You're cuffing them. You're putting people in a vulnerable position when normally they have such freedom. They're trusting you. They feel exposed. They feel captured, but yet they have a trust. So they get to experience a sense of extreme vulnerability, but in a space of caring. And so there's like a thrill, but there's also a surrender to how they really want to feel comforted. So there's a lot of things that are going on. You use these leather binds, but essentially you're moving somebody's mind and heart.
And do they know that when they come in and ask? Or is
a lot of them don't think about it.
But
they have a sense.
Okay.
They have a sense. I think a lot of people don't go through life critiquing why they might be drawn to something.
Mm.
They just live in the emotion of it. And I'm not there to say that they need to think about it.
Mm.
I'm there to do a job. And if I understand my job more intricately, I can do it better.
Mm. Mm. So on that first day when you went in and you were observing, like how did it feel? Did it feel anxious or exciting or what was the feeling?
Growing up, I was going through so many different environments. I didn't understand anything but change and adaptability and new experience. So now I realize that the low level of adrenaline doesn't need to happen all the time.
Mm.
But at that point, it was just the norm for me. It was so much challenge, especially from the other dominatrices. There was just like almost an onslaught.
In terms of
the questions that they would have, in terms of how they would watch you, in terms of the, you know, it's a bunch of very opinionated, creative people in a tiny little room, like almost vying for the same clients.
Mm.
It can be quite competitive and tense, and their frustrations can come out in all sorts of ways. And so it's a very intense environment, not even talking about the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great, but it was...
It was great.
It was very... I mean, even now, I work independently, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of people who start independently, but they take so much longer to understand the job and the possibilities of the job. Whereas because I was sitting there, 25 different opinions, different lives, different things to draw upon, all you had to do was sit there and listen and see how they reacted to things. And that just opened your eyes to, okay, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe this is a good idea.
Mm.
This is another option for me. It taught me so much about the job and I still draw on that today.
And so what you described a minute ago about the hands being bound and the feet being bound sounds psychological.
Mm-hmm.
Is it also sexual or sometimes sexual or always sexual or doesn't, you know, how does that aspect work? Because I think the majority of people who, like myself, who are a bit unclear on how that industry works, the impression is that people go there because they
want to get off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the times people do, but I mean, what is getting off, you know? Is it like an escape from your drudgery? Is it a sense of euphoria that you're missing? Is it a moment of connection? Is it a moment of pleasure that you don't allow yourself? It's many things.
Mm. So it wouldn't have to always be connected to like a base level of sexual gratification.
I mean, love a base level of sexual gratification, but it's sexuality is such a key to so much more of who we are.
Mm.
So sure, we go to get off, but that means so very much to me, at least.
Okay. Mm. And how long did you stay there at that the first BDSM dungeon?
Yeah, until they closed about a year after I joined. They had been in the business for 40 years.
Wow.
They were over it.
Okay, right, okay.
Or they sold their property for $4 million and, you know, they could have, you know, it would have taken more time to make that, and they were towards the end of their career anyway.
Wow. What, the place it was held in they sold, or the actual business?
Just
the property.
The property.
My God.
Which may have come with a brothel license. I think that it's become a brothel now. Yeah.
So that's an interesting point you bring up. So the brothel license. So is a BDSM dungeon legal in the UK?
So this was in New South Wales, Australia.
Ah, okay.
Where sex work is decriminalized.
Okay.
Therefore, you have a lot of licenses, support systems, OH&S staff coming through. I had a business number. I was a sole trader, registered with them. They paid me as an independent contractor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great. You can have all this support, all this security and safety and environment like that.
And is that different to here in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I never worked commercially like that at all here, but it looks a lot more difficult and clandestine, and yeah, people get their bank accounts shut down, and
wow,
yeah, it seems a lot more abrasive and violent for people's well-being.
Okay, so with that first one that you worked at for a year, do you mind me asking, like, what kind of cost is involved for somebody who wants to visit a place like that?
Mm. So sessions were priced by content, and we kind of kept to a similar scale within those walls, even though we were independent contractors and at the end of the day we could have charged whatever we wanted. But generally it was $150 Australian for half an hour of foot worship, which was considered easier, lighter play, all the way up to $600 for an hour, which included full service, which is penetrative sex. And it could be more harder play. So things that end up leaving marks, or that required a lot of equipment, or just more labor intensive.
And when you say leaving marks, mm-hmm. is that on the client or the dominatrix?
So within that BDSM establishment, a lot of the workers would switch, actually. So they would do submissive roles and domination roles.
Okay. And so that closed after a year. And did you stay in... At what age did you arrive in, or at what point did you arrive in the UK? Like, how much longer did you stay in Australia? Did you go anywhere else beforehand?
Well, I only just moved here about 5 days ago.
5 days ago?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, but I've been in and out of here quite a bit lately.
Okay.
Because COVID and family and things like this.
Oh, okay.
But I was in Australia for quite a few years.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you know at that point that, you know, you were like, okay, this is me, this is what I want to do now?
Mm.
Was there a point when you realized that, or was it a slow progression? Because I guess what I'm ultimately building up to asking is, do your parents, not parents, but do your family know what you do? And was there a point that you sat them down and said, oh, by the way, because your previous jobs were quite, I don't know, things that would be traditionally, they sound like things that would be seen as traditionally quite successful and hard to do, ballet and research.
Have
and
a LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, sure, right. Let's say that. LinkedIn profile jobs, yeah.
Although a lot of doms have LinkedIn profiles so that they can do reference checks
clients, yeah, these days. That makes sense.
But it took me 7 years to tell them.
Mm.
Mm. I mean, I was traveling a lot with clients of mine, and I would just say I was doing what I was doing all along. But I know that my mother knew. She just knows. But I didn't know how to tell her. Yeah. In terms of when did I know that I would just be doing this forever? I don't think I'm a forever kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm always open to shifts. But at about the 7-year mark, I realized that not being open with, especially my mother, who I'm very close to, it was detrimental for me. It made me hesitate in my day-to-day because I was considering others' opinions of me when I didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of the crux of that for me. Mm-hmm. I felt like if I could tell her, then I would be more at peace with where I was and how I could learn how to communicate that in the world.
And did you, going into talking to her about it, how did you think she'd react?
I was prepared to be disowned.
Oh.
Yeah, she's pretty Christian. She right. teaches Bible study.
Oh, wow.
Works at a Christian school. But she definitely played the compassion card more than the judgment card when it came down to it. I planned a whole trip. We were going to go to her favorite like city, and I brought my family out, paid for everything, and I didn't end up telling them. What happened was that they left, and I texted in the family group, "I'm staying behind to work." And she said, "Oh, what work is it?" And I said, "Professional domination." So it was WhatsApp.
Oh, wow. It to everyone at once?
Oh, it was just my parents.
Okay.
And she said, "Really?" And then she went to the private chat and said, "Okay, give me some time." I said, "Do you have any questions?" She said, "Give me some time. I'll come back to you." And then we like just acted like normal, whatever, for
a
month.
That's an amazing way to do it, though, actually.
Just to digest.
Yeah, like most people, I think, in situations where they've been told something like that would dive straight in, wouldn't they? But to have the presence of mind to say, "Give me a bit of time to think about this."
Yeah, she's an incredible person. Yeah.
And then after a month or so, she came back and
I took her on another trip.
Okay.
And as soon as we were alone, the questions came. Yeah. What are your motivations? What are the client's motivations? What does the interaction look like? What does the interaction look like when you're not together? Like, do you feel like it's fulfilling? Do they feel like it's fulfilling? How does it impact their life? Like, she was just like, "All right, I want to know." And within half an hour after that, she was joking about it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She's got quite a mind, I really.
Were you able to be honest in your responses? Like, what do the interactions look like? Were you just completely open?
I didn't go too much into the sexuality
aspects
of it. Yeah. But to be frank, I guess I live in the psychological aspects mostly anyway. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was more authentic than not. And now she asks me how work is, and I'm very shy to,
okay.
to go into detail.
Okay.
But it's an open conversation now.
Okay.
This is Ben Powell Jones, and we're just going to take a break from today's episode to talk about one of our sponsors, BetterHelp. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. How much time do you spend on yourself in an average week? So easy to get caught up in what everyone else needs from you and never take a moment to think about what you need from yourself. But when we spend all of our time giving, it can leave us feeling stretched thin and burned out. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. Therapy is something I've used several times in my own life. I think sometimes we think it has to be for huge events or massive changes, but I like to just use it every couple of months or a couple of times a year, check in on myself. If anything's feeling like a struggle, book a few sessions, top myself back up. Visit betterhelp.com/minuteswith today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/minuteswith. Now back to the episode.
And obviously you said earlier that sexuality is very broad and I guess the industry is quite broad too. Mm. Was the industry something you were interested in exploring, or was dominatrix the thing that you were only interested in?
I never realized, okay, so do I think about something and think that I want to try that? I don't think I'm so pointed. I think I get a little sense of something and then I'll dip my toes in and then see if it suits and then see how it looks even more. Mm. I think that's more how I work rather than saying I will have this goal
mm-hmm.
for better or worse. And I had this archetype in my head of this woman in leather, and then I got myself into this dungeon and it worked out really well, mm. right? I just had a thrill and an engagement that I didn't get before then. And sitting in that waiting room with all the other workers, they would talk about their lives. Mm. And a lot of them were working at brothels. A lot of them were doing escort work. And I thought, okay, I'm here. This is a resource. Let's just try this. Mm-hmm. And so I looked for an agency, an escort agency, and I went for an interview. And the first one really didn't work out. They tried to send me on a tour. So that means that you're traveling out of the city mm. as my first job. So I would have been booked on my own in a hotel room. I just thought no. And so I got a hint from a makeup artist on a shoot for the escort agency. And she told me about a more reputable agency. And I contacted them, and they were lovely. They eased me into it. They found a client that was more kink focused first. And yeah, it was more exploratory.
And when you say a client that's more kink-focused, mm. How do you know how to service a kink if you don't feel it yourself? For example, if you have no interest in feet and somebody says to you, I'm a foot fetish. I mean, I probably sound like the most clumsy person trying to describe this word.
Say the word fetishist?
Yeah, fetishist. But if someone tells you, I like that, and you don't understand why that's exciting or sexy, how do you provide that service?
Oh, the thing is, when you see somebody react to the thing, you understand why it's exciting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, at least I do. It's like, maybe I don't find, I don't know, tables that exciting. Yeah. But if you see somebody light up about it, you're like, oh, that's cute.
Okay.
Here's a table. Here's a table. What about that table?
Okay. So is the exploration of different kinks, does it take the same sort of pathway as in seeing their excitement and then...
For me.
Okay.
For me, I love to see how people react to things and I love to see how invested they are. So I can be very versatile in what I am happy to explore or not. Mm. And that also comes, for better or worse. Sometimes it pushes me into areas where I haven't been so comfortable and I've had to figure out in my mind whether I want to navigate it. And then sometimes
what would
it makes
make
me
you
realize,
uncomfortable?
When they start to ask me things about my life.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. Because I am quite open, I didn't understand what I needed to keep to myself at an early stage. Mm. I had to learn that. Yeah. And that where things would bleed.
So you said there the stuff that made you feel uncomfortable was sort of blurring the lines between, you know, your private life and your professional life. Mm. Is there anything that's ever made you feel uncomfortable, as in, have you ever been with a client where you thought the fetish was coming from a frightening place? Or, you know, you said earlier about you didn't want to go off to a hotel room for your first job with, you know, you felt that was potentially unsafe. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I just didn't know what to expect.
You didn't know what to expect,
and
yeah.
To be isolated in a city I didn't know didn't sound like a good idea.
Sure.
On a brand new job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of hesitation, so I didn't go with that. But the only time that I've ever felt a little bit overwhelmed by somebody's desire is a foot fetishist came in and they were not interested in power dynamics. They were just enamored with feet. Mm. And so what happened was I was sitting on the bed and they were on the ground and I kick off my shoes and I put my feet on his face. And then all of a sudden he stands up and like pushes the feet into his face and me onto the bed. And that was the first time that somebody had taken an assertive action around me. Normally, it was all just following as I said. But as soon as I said, excuse me, no, it ended. But it was the only moment where I realized that, okay, so there's a difference between somebody who's there for the fetish and somebody who's there for the power dynamic.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'm more interested in the power dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, you use tables as a, I think as a joke, but I mean, is it possible that someone could come and see you? Like, can you have a fetish in your experience literally about anything? We've all seen documentaries about people who fall in love with roller coasters or cars or things like this, but is your experience that it tends to be the same sort of five topics in circulation, or do people have things that are very unusual fetishes that are probably you've only seen once or something like that?
I think, well, we can just go with statistics in the house. And the most common things were things to do with anal, because bodies have prostates.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get stimulated, it's apparently very engaging.
Mm-hmm. So this is a male client being stimulated?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And then another one was golden showers, people are quite enamored mm-hmm. with. And what was the... feet.
Mm.
Good old feet. Mm. Number one, probably.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily consider themselves kinky are also quite enamored by it. I'm not exactly sure why.
Maybe
there's some sort of erogenous zone that we're not giving time to anymore, perhaps. Mm. But anything unusual? I don't know if I would use the word unusual. I think very detailed is probably the things that would stick out to me the most. So if somebody enjoyed a very particular collar on a particular shirt and they always wanted to see that kind of collar and they wanted to wear it and they wanted to be teased while they were wearing it. I remember that happened once. So I think that things can become very particular.
Wow.
Yeah. But can it be about anything? I don't know how you would have a relationship with a roller coaster.
Well, apparently people do.
Cuddles?
Yes.
A little bit difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're in this experience with people, do you see yourself, like, are you also finding it, you know...
arousing?
Yeah. Or are you having a kind of, do you see your experience more as almost like, a documentarian, you know, you're just in this thing going, oh, this is interesting. This is what they like. I'll do more. You know, how does it work for you and the client together? Mm.
There's so much that's happening in my head that I'm not even sure if I can exactly go into it. But I mean, it takes a lot to run a session. You can plan, but ultimately they're going to react in ways that will be slightly different. So you also have to be reactive. You have a concept of what you want to do. You walk in, they react, and I react to their reaction. And it's just an ongoing cycle like this. Do I invest in their particular thing that they're interested in? Me as a person, I tend to invest in how somebody reacts to their lives. And I am a part of that for that little mm-hmm. while. And the more honest they are and the more raw that they are, the more I want to be there and push it. And I'm not sure exactly what's happening during that time. It's probably a combination of observation and action. But it's like it's a rush, it's a drug, you know? You're getting this thrill-seeking hit of somebody's focus and investment for me.
So there's something there for you. It's beyond a paid job emotionally.
Yeah, because I am not entirely motivated by money. I've always needed that. I think that's where the idealism kind of still has remnants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever got into a situation with a client where there was lines blurred in terms of connecting with them on a deeper level?
Yeah, and it's another thing of mine. I feel like I almost fall in love, you know, every time.
Every time?
In a way. Right. You know, those the little rushes that you can get when you meet somebody that you're attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love to see that rawness in people, and day to day people are hiding that from you, I'm feel honored, I feel thrilled, I feel captivated by it. And so I'm very invested. And I've learned how to feel it for a moment and then step away from it.
Mm.
But it's a very emotional experience for me.
Mm. And I know we've jumped around a little bit, but you left the BDSM dungeon after a year. And then after that, were you immediately just working on your own, taking on individual clients?
Mm. So during my time at the dungeon, I joined the escort agency. And after the dungeon closed, I continued at the escort agency and I figured out how to start branding myself as an independent dominatrix as well. And I kept some of the clients that I had been seeing and I was advertising. I had my own website. I never had my own website by that stage. And I still didn't understand what social media was. I only did that in the last 5 years, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, I started to do really well. I started to do really well. And it was pretty full on until, I mean, I decide not to be full on now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what kind of clients would you say at the beginning there, you know, who were your clients?
It was really all sorts when I was in the house. The house had such a long-standing reputation and a relatively affordable price point that it brought everybody, everybody from legal age up, you know. But when I left, I decided to price my sessions not by content anymore. I was just going to stick to time, which is something that I learned from the escort agency. Mm-hmm. So my time was $700 Australian an hour, which was unheard of in Australia back then for a dominatrix. For some reason, they were always priced less, which I never really understood because for me, there was a physical aspect and like a schmoozing aspect to the escort work that was hard work for sure. But the mental things that you had to run through as a dom, as a dominatrix, it felt like it cost me a lot more. Mm-hmm. So I did the same rate as my escort rate.
And it worked?
And it worked. And it worked. I was fully booked to the point where I burned out. Yeah. Because I just thought I was part of this thing where we had to do 3 shifts a week at the dungeon at 8 hours, which is, you know, fine because it wasn't like back to back or whatever all the time. And I guess when you have that environment, you have a receptionist booking for you, all the gear is there, you don't have to clean it, you don't have to do anything in a lot of ways, security, etc. But when you're independent, you have to do everything yourself. Mm-hmm. And I was using the work schedule, but doing everything myself. So it was actually more, and it was just too much. I burned out, and after a series of events, a partner of mine said, well, why are you not just charging more? And that's when I started to edge up and up and up and up. And now I just, I priced myself out of all of the people who I used to be able to meet back in the day.
So do you see, did you see a change in your clientele based on that period of time?
Yeah, but it's only because of the price point.
Yeah.
Not because of me or, yeah.
So what, I guess it changed from anyone who wanted to experience that to...
to only the people who could afford what I was asking for, which are a very small amount of people, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you continued to raise your prices?
I still am open to raising them. Now that I'm settled here in the UK, I have closed books at the moment, but I might open it up again.
And does closed books mean that you're not taking on clients?
Yeah, new ones, unless it's like an exceptional application.
Okay, so does that mean that with your clients are continuous clients? It's not people that come to see you for one session and go, okay, that was great, thanks.
They get very invested.
Wow, really? So you see what's the longest you've ever seen a client for?
In a session or
no, like
as a relationship?
Yeah, yes, as a relationship.
I mean, I still see people who I saw in my first year.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Every time that I'm back in Sydney, they are there waiting.
So how long ago is that?
11 years, 12 years.
And are these people, you know, do they tend to be single people or married people or?
All over.
All over. Mm. And do you think with the married people, do you think that their partners know about it or?
Some of them.
Yeah. Mm. Some do, some don't. And why do you think, so somebody who's married, who's been married for a long time, who comes to see you, why do they need to come and see you instead of experiencing it with their partner?
Why do you go and watch football with your friends instead of your partner? I mean, it's not exactly the same thing, but we have interests that we like to compartmentalize. We have parts of ourselves that we don't want to show other people. Mm. Sometimes the partner's just not interested. Mm. And why would you force that on somebody when you have a relationship that you otherwise are interested in?
Mm. And during the period you were developing, so you said a minute ago, a partner said to you, why don't you put your prices up? Mm. So over the time that you were beginning to do this job, you know, did you have partners that, you know, unrelated to the job, personal relationships. Mm-hmm. Did you have those at the same time?
Yeah, many different ones. Lots of different dates, lots of different partners of varying intensity. Yeah.
And would you tell them about your job, or would you just see how it goes for a while, or what was your kind of thing there?
Pretty much from the first BDSM dungeon job that I had, I started telling everybody in my day-to-day life.
Mm.
Yeah. That was what I would offer up when people would ask what I did for work, unless I thought people really wouldn't be able to handle it.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is rare, thankfully.
And how did, you know, did you ever have any issues with relationships based on, you know, what you do for a living, or not really?
People would say that they wouldn't have issues, and I would always be as transparent as I could, and I would include them on my thoughts around my work, you know, just like any other job. But sometimes it would be turned on me eventually. They might say, how could you choose to do that when you're so old? Or I think what you really need is somebody fully in that world, and not, it's just people projecting their lack of awareness of what they're looking for onto me.
Mm.
Because I'm very frank about who I am, what I do. I try to include people. You know, it's very clear. They understand about my clients. I even talk about my clients with them. And at the moment, I have a few people in my life who take it on board very well and don't hold things against me. And why? What's the difference between them? And I guess they live more in a community, and times have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
They live more in a community that is open to speak about where they stand and their hang-ups and be all right with them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I guess maybe 10 years ago, a little bit around there, it was not as much of a conversation. And so people had to suffer on their own and then project it on the people mm-hmm. around them a little bit more.
It's interesting, you said earlier that you suspected, it sounds like you really respect your mum. You said that earlier. But you said earlier that you suspected she'd disown you
mm.
when you told her. Mm. But for you, the job was work. You would rather continue the job and have taken that risk. So it seems like it's a very important thing for you.
I think it was less about the job and more about the honesty. Because if I had stopped the job, I still would have done it at some
okay.
point.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so it was about the quality of a relationship based on truth as opposed to what I was doing.
Would there ever be a situation where someone could say to you, whether it's a partner or a family member, look, I really, really want you to stop doing this, and mm-hmm. you would? Or has it become a really important part of your personality for you now?
I would want to know why.
Mm.
Why would you like me to stop? Mm. If it was, I'm very, again, open. If people are going to give me a valid sound argument that I felt was acceptable, then I'm open to it. But I cannot imagine what that would look like.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people's understanding of what you do mm. is probably from 50 Shades of Grey.
Ah. I read about 100 pages and I couldn't handle it.
Okay. why did you stop?
Why did I stop reading 50 Shades of Grey at the 100-page mark? I really wanted to understand. It was just so widely accepted. I was very curious as to see what was drawing people in,
mm.
especially because it was tangential to my world. But I think I felt like the submissive didn't have enough of grounding. There was something very wishy-washy about how she was reacting to the world around her.
Not enough of a personality, I guess, okay. maybe. And that seemed very untrue to me. And then also the way that he was acting was very, very shallow. It was very like you would say something and then this would happen. It just doesn't really work like that. You can't just give an instruction and then somebody's going to do it. You have to build an air of authority. You have to build a trust. You have to build a connection. And it was just so simplistic and basic that it made me angry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting when that book was released that suddenly a topic that has been seen as niche and probably deviant by a lot of society was suddenly quite accepted.
Mm.
You know, Christian Grey, the main character, and his, you know, what he liked to do was suddenly seen as a very almost cool thing.
What did he like to do in the end?
What did he like
to do? I don't know.
Well, I haven't actually read the book. I know I saw the first film and I had the same feeling as you, not okay. because that's my career, just because I wasn't interested in it. Mm-hmm. However, suddenly there was a lot of people talking about domination, submission, that kind of thing in a very mainstream way.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you saw that, like a post that, if you saw a boom in people interested in trying that.
I don't think they would have been able to afford me.
They were priced out at that point. Okay.
But I see it now, you know, especially because now I'm actually on social media.
Yeah.
I see so many people are so intrigued by what I do. And so many women ask about doing what I do.
Really?
All the time. They're so curious. They don't just want to know about the confidence or the power or the assertion. They want to know how to do what I do. And I don't necessarily encourage it because it's a very difficult job in a very hostile society. Mm. But I'm very curious as to why it's of such interest right now. Why do you think? I mean, you have me here.
Well, it's a good question. I suppose that probably social media, and especially video-based social media where you can share clips of different things. Stuff like 50 Shades of Grey, I think, has made it mainstream and made the interest mainstream.
Yeah.
There's another very successful show on Netflix called The Sinner.
Okay.
It's three series of it. Oh. But basically the main character in that is a police detective. He's a really good detective, but in his private time he goes to a dominatrix because he has a lot of pent-up guilt about stuff that happened in his childhood.
Okay.
And I remember when I saw that, the thing that interested me...
Is it better than 50 Shades?
It is.
Okay.
It's, well, I think so. You might also be angered by that. You have to email us and tell us. But I thought what was interesting about it was I was watching it, and usually in stuff like Netflix dramas, the characters' motivations are made very clear to you, right? Because it's a big, broad platform. You have to know what's happening. Mm. But I couldn't understand what this guy was getting out of it.
Okay.
And there's things like he was punished physically, and he was made to feel pain, and he'd ask for forgiveness from the dominatrix, and things like there's one scene where he'd be in the supermarket and he was shopping and he came across her in the wild, not in there, and she kind of stared at him and tipped his basket over and then walked over. And I suppose for me, you know, I'm not sure how popular that series was, but when I was saw that, I became more interested in that world because it was clear to me that that's obviously been written from some sort of experience or understanding those scenes.
Mm.
And clearly the detective was getting something from it. I can't understand what he was getting from it.
Mm.
So I guess maybe there's an interest in why do people, you know, the impression of it is that you go to a dungeon somewhere, you get chained up and you get whipped. You know, that's the base level of, I think, what most people think it is. I don't understand what people get out of that if it's not some kind of sexual gratification.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem to be more into that world of not the sexual side, but the psychological side.
Well, sex is psychology.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
I get off on it too. But I mean, I can talk about why I go. I think why everyone else goes for so many different reasons, right? Why I'm there is because, like I've mentioned, people are honest with me in that space. They're vulnerable with me. I get to see how they really are. A lot of the time, the artifice of the day-to-day is really dull for me to interact with. It's not real. It's not engaging. I'm not interested. But there in that space with me, I get to really see a human.
Mm.
And it's nice to feel that connection to something that seems real to me. And aside from that, it's such a challenging environment. I have to run it. I have to run somebody's emotional life for a little while. I have to control how they're going to think, how they're going to move, how they're going to think of me. And it's very challenging, and it's a creative exercise. So it's very rewarding for me because I'm geared in the way where I need a lot of creative psychological stimulation. So it works for me. And that does get me off. Not always, but it comes together to do that for me. Mm. And I assume that it's similar for other people in varying ways. Mm. On top of the fact that somebody is just happy to see you vulnerable and connect with you, which is a nice general feeling that everybody wants.
Mm. It sounds like part of what you're describing is like an honesty. Mm-hmm. So I guess when I'm thinking back to what you said earlier about one of the popular ones is golden showers, that might be something people are embarrassed about. Mm. And if you have a partner, maybe you're embarrassed to ask your partner.
I think so. It can be.
So you can go to somebody who won't have a judgment and you can feel like you can truly be yourself and say what you want to receive, and they'll react to that without kind of like potentially horror and disgust.
Shaming you unless you want to feel shame.
Right. Sure. Gets complicated there, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Ben Powell Jones. We're just taking a brief break so I can tell you about one of our sponsors. A brand new 6-part podcast from Message Heard and Podimo, Who Robs a Banksy follows journalist Jake Warren as he sets out to explore the stranger-than-fiction tale of the man who kidnapped a Banksy statue from the middle of central London in broad daylight and held it to ransom. The act would lead to an almost 20-year war of bad blood, relations, and legal battles that are still being waged today, and it all comes down to one man and one vendetta. But it doesn't end there. The story will take us on a journey through UK's most subversive subcultures, from art heists and art terrorists to 80s football hooliganism and the 90s illegal rave scene, even fetish parties. And throughout it all, Jake will be trying to get a hold of the most elusive and famed anonymous artist in the world. In the new 6-part series, host Jake Warren speaks to Tiger King of the art scene, Andy Link, and those closest to Banksy himself, exposing their 2-decade-long feud and attempting to track down the world's most elusive anonymous artist. Who Robs a Banksy is available now wherever you get podcasts. To hear the whole series ad-free, subscribe to Podimo UK on Apple Podcasts. Now back to our episode.
Have you seen any shows, read any books or films or whatever that give an accurate representation of what you do?
Accurate. I really enjoyed Irene Adler in Sherlock, talking about mainstream things.
Okay.
Yeah, that the scene where she's wearing nothing but indecipherable earrings. And the thought process that goes between the two of them in it. I thought that that was an interesting thing. I don't think that she's portrayed as a dom necessarily, but the power dynamic is quite authentic. And the game that happens, I think, was pretty fun to watch. Yeah, and that reminds me of when you were talking about the mainstreaming of the job a bit. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like, if you had told me that I would be sitting here like this when I was first starting, I wouldn't have really been able to conceptualize how that was a thing. There's also an element of threat that happens with the more exposed that I am. Mm. But at the same time, if people don't hear the stories, it won't become less destigmatized, which is why I do it, right? And so it's this tension, I guess. People need to hear it more. People maybe need a shallow entry, such as 50 Shades. But where is the danger of that looking inaccurate? Where's the danger of that actually being a detriment? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Just waiting around trying to figure it out like the rest of us.
So do you have any, in terms of, you know, you've had quite a long career so far, I guess. Have you done any particularly adventurous jobs or ones that you remember as things that you wouldn't do again or particularly surprising to you in terms of what you were asked?
That I wouldn't do again. I don't know. Now I have some very long relationships with my subs who I'll see every month for days at a time. And Days at a time.
Wow.
They're involved in my life. I know their families.
You know. Wow.
it's pretty intensive. It's
so know your, do you mean you know their families and they've told you about them or you'll meet them?
Both.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a friend, usually. Mm. but yeah, no, I'm quite involved and their lives have shifted because I've been in it. Their minds have shifted, how they approach their work, everything. So it gets very involved. I feel like, I don't know if I would do this again. It's ended up being wonderful in the instances that it's come out from, because I guess I tend to just make the most of what I have. And it's been very profitable also financially. But it does take over your life.
Mm.
Yeah. So I don't know if I would go via this angle again. But then another part of me thinks that maybe there's no other way, because I like that kind of communication and engagement and that complexity. So maybe I'm just destined for for things that maybe are where the boundaries are blurred.
You said earlier that you got to a point in Australia where you decided to charge £700 for an hour of your time, $700 for an hour of your time. I mean, what does 3 days look like? Or, you know, did the
$10,000 a day.
Wow. Okay. So I guess if you get to a point where you're very successful, it can be a very, very lucrative industry.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, definitely not everyone's going to get to this stage. It's very, very few of us. And it helps that I have a corporate background and I know how to structure things and negotiate, especially. Mm. But yeah, it's... I could not have imagined that this would have been happening for me. I was just following a joy.
Mm. Mm. And how has a platform like OnlyFans affected your industry, or in fact, has it affected it?
I have one and it amuses me, but because I manage it myself, a lot of people get other people to manage it, I don't necessarily have so much time for it. It's brought me some interesting connections, but I don't work it like other people do. I'm very happy that it's provided crazy income streams for a lot of people, but I don't know if it's really impacted me in any way aside from giving people another avenue to connect.
Okay, so for you personally, it's not been something that you've seen a huge...
Well, I mean, I have had an online thing even pre-OnlyFans. I still have a website where I do courses and people learn how to worship my feed or to look at photos of me, you know, and rather than just like looking and jerking off, I take them through a process of what I want them to feel. And so there's these courses that teach people how to engage with me, and it's a member site. And that went mad during COVID. Mm. Like it just... It went up like 80% in terms of my signups. But then with that comes the issue of the adult industry, and I could only be with one payment processor, and that payment processor went bankrupt. And so I only ended up seeing 10% of my money that year. Yeah, so the online world is a great opportunity, but as long as financial systems are against sexuality, it will not necessarily be a stable space for
That's
us.
Interesting. Well, I guess in some ways then OnlyFans has become a successful way of doing it because of...
Yes, they also have their own issues, though. I mean, they are in courts.
Yeah, okay.
Restructuring, being asked to restructure things a lot that maybe the end users don't see.
Okay. You mentioned earlier the price in dollars. Is that American dollars?
10,000 American dollars.
And I believe that's around 8,000 British pounds a day, which is an amazing amount of money.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to, once I feel settled here, I might open my books again and I'll start at £1,000 for an hour. And I might offer a half day for maybe
£5,000. And what does a session look like? You know, I imagine, you know, no two are the same or whatever, but, you know, like what are the tools of a dominatrix? What are the things that you might expect to have to use?
So when you're working independently, it can look a little bit differently. When I worked in the house, people would walk in off the street. They would sit in the waiting room. You would meet them. They would ask for specific things, you know, limited, maybe they had a limited budget, and they would expect those things to be pushed into a session for a certain amount of time. Now you can run it however you want when you're independent. You can only accept sessions that are these three things. You can only do dinners where there's a power dynamic. It's really up to you. How I run things is I ask them to tell me why they want to serve me. I want them to be invested in myself as opposed to just their kinks. And then they can tell me a bit about their experience and what they hope for. And usually I will meet them for like social time, like just to get a sense of who they are and whether they are going to engage with me how I want to be engaged with. And then we can move into a space where I'll use the things that they're interested in to get the headspace that I want to get off on. Yeah. So it could be anything. They could be heavy bondage lovers, which is probably one of my favorite. There's a lot of leather, a lot of gear. It could be like somebody who is just simply into like chastity and you just toy things around them not being able to have control of their own orgasm. You know, it could be them just wanting to be in domestic servitude to you. So coming and cleaning your house while you're there. It could be all sorts. Yeah.
And what about the kind of, the stereotypical image like whipping people and things like that. Does that happen?
It does happen, but actually a lot of people are not into pain.
I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, pain and how it transfers to pleasure is actually quite linked, but there's a lot of things that people have around their relationship to pain that helps them to avoid it. And so a lot of people don't ask necessarily to be whipped to feel torture. But it does get asked, and it is a really nice skill that I enjoy. And there is a lot of catharsis when you receive it and when you give it. But does everybody want it? No.
And do you ever dislike your clients? Will you take on a client if you dislike them personally?
Oh, long term, no. Momentarily, I probably have a moment of dislike for many people. But that's just human interaction.
Sure.
You know, it's not like I dislike the person. I just don't like what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's okay. We can talk about it. Yeah.
Okay. You seem very comfortable with yourself and what you do. Is there anywhere inside that makes you sometimes think, if I could go back, I might not have taken this path? Or is there any, you know, do you have any, you don't seem to have any doubts basically about what you do. Is that fair to say as an assessment or not really?
I think I have I'm not 100% sure of anything, but that's the only way that we can be. So I'm very comfortable with that. Do I believe that the way that I've chosen is the right way? I believe there is no right way. I believe there are ways that are going to hurt less people. But I don't think that there's a definitive. I think I'm more comfortable in the unknown than other people. So it might come across as confidence or no doubt, but it's just that I understand that we will never know and I'm okay with that.
So talking about your clients, like what you've said now is you've got closed books, so you're not taking on clients currently. You're happy with the ones that you have.
But once I get settled in London, I might feel more settled to do that again.
But what, I mean, it sounds like you charge an amount of money that really would only be able to be accessible now by sort of highly paid businessmen, or, you know, what would be... Would that be accurate as a representation?
There's an entrepreneurial set who can also afford it, but I don't really like them.
Oh, why is that?
I guess that when it comes to corporate structures, you have to be able to operate within them and understand where you stand. And so there are more skills around getting along with people. I think that when you are a startup founder, there's a lot more things around being bullish and negotiation, and rather than clandestinely getting there, really pushing your way through. And that kind of personality set doesn't really sit very well with me. I like an elegance to your manipulation.
Okay, sure.
Not a bullishness.
On the topic of manipulation, do you find that over your years of, you know, exploring people's psyches, does that bleed into your everyday life with friendships? I mean, you must be getting a raw sense of what humans want, you know, because in a lot of times in relationships, you tell people what you want based on what you think is the, what you think is the right thing for someone to hear you want. Whereas what you're hearing, I guess, is people at the base level being allowed to ask for anything. So do you feel that when you're in friendships with people, there's a, I don't know, a control or a manipulation or an understanding or an empathy, I don't know how you want to call it, but does what you've learned through your career bleed into that kind of relationship?
I mean, everything that we do bleeds into everything else. I think that I've cut a lot of friends over the years because they were not honest enough and engaging enough for me. I don't think that there's a sense of obvious manipulation going on that I worry about. I'd rather not have to think about that. Mm. I just want to gently exist and yet be entertained in my day-to-day interactions. And that's who I gravitate towards these days. It's a lot of other people who are also working in the industry, but also some who aren't.
Mm. Mm. And how do you, so you said that you cut people who you don't find interesting, basically. You know, how do you meet people these days in terms of friendships or, you know, things like that? Where do you go to meet people that you think will give you stimulation?
I'm not really looking for new friends.
Okay, your books are closed on that as well, on clients and friends.
I'm open to them.
Right.
But no, I feel very satiated right now. Mm. Yeah.
If there was people, you know, listening who are, you said that people reach out to you interested in what you do, and a lot of women. Mm. Do you encourage people to pursue it as an avenue, or, you know, what advice do you give to people? Or if people are listening now and they're thinking that's something I've always been kind of fascinated by, what would you say?
I would say figure out why you're fascinated by it. Mm. Is it because you enjoy how you see me communicate and that's what you want for your life? Is it because you want the fashion? Is it because you want the money? There are many ways to get all of these different things. Maybe choose a way that isn't necessarily something that the government and society says is very wrong right now, unless you think that you really have, you know, the guts to challenge that. Because I'm not saying that we should do what society or the government necessarily tells us every time. I think that these things should always be open for discussion at the very least. But whether you have the fortitude and the support system and the space in yourself that will be challenged, and you're ready for that, then you need to think twice about doing this. Yeah. I think a lot of the times people enjoy seeing this archetype of strength. I think that might be the thing that people are gravitating towards, trying to find a power for themselves. I mean, I wouldn't know how to begin to tell people to do that. I can only tell people how I am and how it works for me.
Mm. How long do you think you'll do this for?
It's very hard to say because it gives me such mental challenge. So I don't know if I will want to end it. Yeah.
What do you think you would have done if you hadn't done this?
I feel like I would have been, I would have followed my father's footsteps into law, which wouldn't have been good for anybody.
Sure, all right.
Yeah.
And I guess you said you've just moved to London very recently, 3 days ago. Are you seeing people this week?
My main slave is coming to town next week.
My main slave, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, you haven't used that term before. Is that the lingo?
Well, for him, yes.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And what would, so you said a submissive earlier. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between that and a slave?
Well, people will define it as submissive can just be a psychological identity. Slave also, but it can have more connotations rather than submission to a dominant. It can have more connotations around the being owned, being property. Yeah. And I recently collared him, which is kind of like a marriage sort of-esque. direction. Really? Yeah. And so in the contract that we have, I've used the term slave and he seemed pretty happy. So we're rolling with that.
Wow. So collared, did you say? Is that a term that's used?
It's a term that's used, yeah. So now he belongs to me.
Okay. Yeah. And you've signed a contract where he's said that.
Yeah.
Do you have...
Do I have the contract?
No, I wasn't going to ask that. I laughed because I realised what an absurd question it was, but do you have a lot of slaves?
Is it an absurd question?
Well, in my world, not in your world.
Yeah. Do I have a... What is a lot?
More than one.
yes, but collared, no. Right. Yeah.
And so what's collared? Is that the contract?
So collared is like, this is a formal arrangement now. So it's like a marriage, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And do you have to...
It can happen for defined periods of time, though, according to the contract you negotiate.
Okay. Mm. And is there a financial element to the contract?
There can be if you want it to be.
Okay. Mm. Do you have any female...
I have a few submissives, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, great. I mean, we're almost at the end. The thing that I wanted to ask you, I guess, is like when you look back on your life, which, I mean, it sounds like you've lived in a lot of places and you've met a lot of different types of people and you've had a job that not that many people have had. You know, what's your life taught you? What's been the lesson you've learned from your life?
Lesson. What is your lesson? It gives me time to think.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I haven't had an interesting life like you have. So I don't know if I think, I guess what's interesting is when we meet a lot of people and they sit here, it's like I'm someone, like all of us in this room have probably had very comparable lives in terms of like growing up, going to university, maybe going abroad for a gap year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's much that I could say that people had listened to on a podcast and go, oh, wow, yeah, I see why fruit picking in Australia for 6 months has taught that fantastic thing.
It depends how you saw it for yourself, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, and also that's an incredible opportunity. How many people in the world get to go to another place to work a totally different life and come back and be able to feed themselves? I mean, that's a luxury.
No, I totally get that. I guess... how have you done this? Why? Why am I justifying why I'm not the subject of the podcast? I'm not even going to justify it. You know, people are never going to read a podcast title, Middle-Aged White Dad. You know what I mean? I think, you know, international.
I don't want to get too far away from it, but I am very interested to know what dads think about their lives. We don't hear about it enough, I think. Anyway, back to me.
Well, I can tell you what nursery dads think about their lives. They all stand out the front waiting for their kids and pretend they're having a nice chat, but compete over how far up the scale their child is and how fast they're developing. That's what nursery dads think.
Okay. And then we could go into why that is, but we won't.
Okay.
What do I think that I've learned from my life? That I know nothing, and so I might as well enjoy it. I think maybe that will change.
Do you see yourself, the thing that you're doing, are you bringing pleasure to other people or are you doing something for yourself, do you think?
Definitely both.
Mm-hmm. Look, Eva, it's been brilliant to have you on. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
And it's great to hear this kind of like articulate description of a world I don't think we often get a window into. I also think it's really interesting to have a window into it from a completely positive side, because I think often a lot of times when these kind of things are reported on, they're done so with a pre-held bias that it must be a negative thing. I think it's interesting to hear it discussed as, I mean, you say it was a positive experience.
I would say it's a positive experience because in general, I tend to take positive things out of life, but it's come with a lot of challenge, but I enjoy challenge. It comes with a lot of toil. I'm somewhat of a masochist alongside my sadism. You know, I really enjoy the experience of life, no matter how much pain I sometimes feel. I enjoy it. I'm the weird person who doesn't have a medicine cabinet.
That's true.
I enjoy feeling sick. I enjoy being alive. Yeah. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask if you're going to ask for a negative experience. You can find something interesting in almost everything.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in.